G-minus 40. Ford McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Well into the night, but only shortly after he finally managed to fall asleep, Clark McCarthy jolted awake as a familiar bad dream reached its climax. It wasn't quite a nightmare, and certainly not a night terror of the kind he'd experienced semi-regularly when certain memories from his time in Iraq were fresher in his mind, but it was vivid enough to have sent his heart racing. The dream was the same every time, usually coming around once a month. Clark found himself in the back seat of his car, leaning forward with his hands on the steering wheel but unable to reach the pedals or handbrake. He had spoken to Tara about it, and after looking online, she told him it supposedly indicated that he felt a lack of control in his life. That the dream tended to come at the end of difficult days like the one that had just ended lent credence to this theory, which Clark accepted readily enough. The only variable that changed within these thematically similar dreams was the location of the road Clark was careening along as he desperately sought to avoid any collisions. Tonight, for a reason he couldn't even begin to guess, looking out of his car's side window in the vivid but not quite lucid dream had revealed that he was passing the airport in Denver. He hadn't been thinking about the airport whatsoever, and it took a few moments of recalling everything that had been discussed in a revelation-packed day to recall that Denver had come up when he was talking to Henry about Chip Petrovich. It didn't seem to make any kind of sense that this made it into Clark's dream world consciousness after all the far more dramatic discussions of New Kerguelen or even Buenos Aires, but he shrugged his shoulders and accepted that there was no rulebook for dreams that stated they had to make sense. Waking up in Tara's bed without her was uncomfortable for Clark, particularly when he reflected upon how far away she was and how truly out of his control her physical well-being currently was, but he trusted Sacco to take as much care with her as he had promised before leaving. Clark also knew that Leisha, who could remotely communicate with Sacco if necessary, was just a few miles away at the Fiori Frontieri building and would have no problem arriving almost instantaneously should the need arise. Clark hoped to hear nothing from either Sacco or Leisha before Tara and Dan arrived back in Birchwood as quickly as possible, needless to say, since any news preceding their return was unlikely to be of the welcome variety. Nevertheless, however, knowing that Leisha could easily reach him even if something prevented Sacco from doing so was somehow reassuring. More than a little surprised to see that it was only 3:41 a.m. when he glanced at his phone, Clark walked into the kitchen and plumped himself down in his usual seat at the table. He hated being alone in this house. It just didn't feel right. Emma and Piper were sound asleep, of which he was glad, but the solitude that came with Tara's absence was of a very unsettling kind. TV wasn't an option to occupy his mind, since lowering the projector from its recessed compartment in the ceiling was a process loud enough to wake the baby when the house was as otherwise silent as was currently the case. Now that it sadly already felt like getting any more sleep wasn't an option either, Clark unlocked his phone and navigated to its news app. Links to stories about Godfrey's disappearance and others focusing more specifically on Emma's semi-explanatory call for a calm reaction dominated the first several rows of thumbnail images, with all of the photos either showing Godfrey's empty podium or a still from Emma's video statement. The headlines about Emma all indicated that the articles were broadly receptive to her words, a fact made possible by Clark's manual exclusion of all Blitz Media properties from the app's default listings. Despite a morbid curiosity to know what they were saying, Clark also avoided the temptation to open his phone's browser and manually check Blitz Online. As ever, he was stubbornly reluctant to give them a click and the fractions of a cent it would have brought in advertising revenue. In any event, it wasn't exactly difficult for Clark to imagine the kind of scathing anti-messenger reactions that were likely already filling its op-ed section, and the kind of sensationalist and fear-mongering questions that would be filling its homepage, as they did on any other day, even when nothing nearly so remarkable as the sudden abduction of the ICA chairman during his own inauguration had occurred. Just as he was about to click into one British article about John Cole's actions having delivered yet another national embarrassment, however, a short message popped up on Clark's phone to deliver a piece of news far less welcome than anything even Blitz Online could have thrown at him. The text message came from Phil Norris, which was highly unusual in itself, but its content was what shocked Clark to his core and had him desperately wishing he was still dreaming. Intruder on my property. I need backup. Battenberg. Can't talk. Arrive quietly and no police. Clark felt as though his heart missed several beats as he read these dozen or so words, and a reread only served to make things worse. He hadn't imagined it, and he hadn't misread it. Phil Norris, an always well-equipped man who Clark would favor in a confrontation with just about any human intruder, really was texting him in the middle of the night in an overt plea for help. Battenberg was there as Phil's code word, proving the message truly came from him and wasn't some kind of trap. Whatever was happening out at Stevenson Farm, it wasn't a drill and wasn't a game. Clark rose to his feet and took a deep breath. His feet were momentarily paralyzed as his mind ran through its options, chiefly debating whether to wake either Henry or Emma. He settled for no, knowing that Henry would be insistent on joining him despite the fact that he would be unable to easily flee across the wet grass if any danger arose, and that he wouldn't even be able to enter or exit Phil's farmhouse via the rampless back entrance if the front door was out of commission for one reason or another. Clark would have been willing to take Emma and her remarkably quick-thinking mind along, if she had been insistent on it, and he likely would have woken her had she not been with Piper. With Dan and Tara currently on another planet, and the only people next door being the already ruled-out Henry and the decidedly unsuitable potential guardian that was William Godfrey, Clark grabbed his jeans and shoes as quickly and quietly as he could. His car keys were already in the pocket of his jeans, which came as a huge relief since it meant he didn't have to go next door to fetch them and risk running into Henry and having to explain his urgent departure without the fight that would come with telling him he couldn't come. At the last second, Clark remembered to pick his phone back up from the kitchen table, having left it there in shock as he jumped into his clothes. On my way, Battenberg, he hurriedly typed in reply to Phil's desperate request. Hang tight, and don't do anything stupid.